And welcome. It is Your Money. It is 8 minutes past eight. I'm Susie Jones, and once again, we're happy to have with us on our newsline Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor. We also have senior vice president and financial advisor Peg Webb. Welcome to both of you. Again, I am out here at the Minnesota State Fair on the porch, Bruce and Peg, so if you hear random funny sounds in the background, that's what's happening.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg. Hello, Susie Jones. Susie, I'm glad you're enjoying the State Fair and getting great weather out there. And today we're going to talk about, and you know what, Peg, we've been promising this for a while. Almost 2 months ago now, the one big, beautiful bill was signed into law by President Trump. It's, I think, roughly 800 pages in the law, so we wanted to take some time and make sure we understood it, and we've narrowed that 800 pages down to what we think are kind of the five key things that most people, most of our listeners, want to know about and are impacted by. And finally, after weeks of promising, we're going to do the show on what you need to know about the one big, beautiful bill. Peg?
Yeah, I was thinking this morning, after being in four decades of this, you know, financial advisor as a career, really just keep change, just keeps us on our toes, that's for sure, because it's just never been smooth. And actually, I kind of embrace change anyway. So I'm excited about to talk about some of these changes that probably affect a lot of you listening. And those of you that are sitting out there in the fair, you'll probably go, oh, well, that pertains to me. So the first one, Bruce, that I want to talk about, and I think we all probably know that there was no real surprise on tax hikes. Like, what tax rates are we going to have in the future? Well, if we go back to that Tax Cuts Job Act from 2018, those brackets are now what they're calling permanent. But permanent, I just said about all this change, probably until the next tax bill comes along. We are just kind of avoiding any change. But I think this is probably the most calmest part of this big bill, in that those marginal rates are going to stay at that 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, and 37. But the bottom line is, how do we take advantage of those? Bruce, you and I and our firm has been working on this, thinking that that was going to change, and we still think it's going to change, but what do you do now? Well, basically, you almost want to create additional income while these brackets are low, and lock in some of this long-term tax efficiency if you can, because just, I don't know about you guys, but I'm hearing all the time about, you know, trying to balance the budget and how do we gather enough money to run, you know, America, Bruce?
Yeah, well, you know, Peg, the word permanent, you're right. It's never really permanent, but I think what they mean by that, or what we mean by that is, you know, 10 years ago or whenever it was, the Tax and Jobs Act, the law was written with a sunset provision that we knew that if no other action was taken, everything was scheduled to go back to the old tax rates at the beginning of 2026 or the end of 2025, and we now know that's not going to happen. But you know what, Peg? The planning that we've done in recent years, where we've told clients taxes are on sale, and there's some opportunities now because tax rates will probably never be lower than they are right now, and they may be going up in 2026. That planning still made sense, because even though taxes are not going up now in 2026, which is good news for most listeners, they still may go up in the future. When you look at, you know, projections for the federal debt and deficit, and when you consider the history of where tax rates have been, I still think you can make the case for some time in our future, for, or at least for some people, taxes might go up. I certainly don't think for most people, they're going to be lower than they are right now. So it's good news for most of us that they're not going up in 2026. But I still think the planning that we've done in recent years made sense. And that same planning might still make sense. So things like Roth conversion, things like that are still worthwhile looking at or taking capital gains now. You're probably never going to be at a lower rate than you are right now. So I think there's still planning opportunities. But the other thing, Peg, I wanted to mention, and this isn't in the outline, but I was reminded again during the week, and I've actually had this happen a lot over the years. I don't know if you've experienced this or not, but a lot of people don't understand that our tax system is progressive. You know, you mentioned the different federal tax brackets, 10, 12, 22, 24, and so on. I've had a lot of people over the years, Peg, I'll kind of make an example that's not a real example, but put some numbers to it to try to give some clarity. Let's say I've got a client that their overall adjusted gross income is $90,000. That puts them in a 12% federal bracket. And they have something that happens, a promotion or an opportunity that somehow they're going to make more money, and they go, oh, my gosh, now my income, you know, after adjusted income, after I take my deductions, now it's going to be $100,000. If I go over 93 or 94, that moves me to a 22% bracket. Maybe I should turn down that money. Maybe I shouldn't take the promotion or the new job because I'm going to be in a higher tax bracket. Well, you only pay that 22% or that higher rate on the money over and above the $93,000 that's the top of the 12% tax bracket. It does not go back to 22% for dollar one. So your actual blended tax rate might end up being, you know, 14% if some of the money's taxed at 22. But it's progressive. It's only when you go over the peak of the previous rate. So yes, in efficient tax planning, we do try to prevent bracket creep, I'm doing air quotes, bracket creep, or moving into a higher tax bracket. But if it does happen, if it's inevitable or unavoidable, it's usually not as big of a deal as people think it is. And Peg, I think sometimes you and I take things like that for granted that everybody knows, but I had a situation this week, and it's happened to me many times, where I had a client that didn't know that or didn't understand that. Peg?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The other thing that is kind of a bonus and not many people are talking about it is the standard deduction actually permanently increased. So as an example, if you're single and you're doing standard, which by the way, 70% of the people have been doing standard and not itemizing, that might change. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But a single person would have $15,000 as a standard deduction, and it's increased to $15,750 2025. They're just doing a blanket increase. And with married filing jointly, $30,000 is going to $31,500. And those are going to continue to be adjusted for inflation. So that's something new too, where your standard deduction, so you're going to have a little bit more deduction, which leads me into, Bruce, the next item is kind of the one that's been the most talked about, is this seniors 65 plus can claim this extra $6,000 federal deduction per person in tax years starting this year, 2025 to 2028. And even if you're itemizing, so this is kind of a big deal, right? You don't have to be just a standard filer. You can also get this even if you're itemizing. So both itemizers, non-itemizers, they're going to get to claim this once again if you're 65 plus. And what it is you can actually take $6,000 federal deduction per person. So if it's a married couple, it's $12,000. And it's a big deal because when you think about it now, we talked about the standard deduction at $31,500 for married people. Also, if you're up plus 65, you already get $3,200 as a couple because you're 65 plus. That was already in our tax law. Now you get the bonus depreciation or deduction, not depreciation, but deduction. So now you've got a total of $46,700 that's actually deduction. So one of the things that we do want to encourage people to do is review, just like we said a minute ago, is you may be able to do some other things, you know, create more taxable income because you're going to have lower income based on all these deductions. And once again, it's 65 plus, Bruce.
Yeah, and again, there was a lot of misinformation, Peg, that came out as a result of this feature of the tax law. There was a lot of things being reported that the taxes on your Social Security benefit were eliminated. That's actually not true at the federal level. And again, you got a different kettle of fish for what, depending upon what state that you live in. But Social Security income is technically still taxable. What this deduction was supposed to do is offset some of that tax that you'd pay on Social Security, but it did not eliminate taxes on Social Security. But a lot of people listening right now are going to qualify for this temporary deduction, at least, you know, from through 2028. And again, so this is a big deal, and it is going to lower taxes for a lot of people, but it does not technically eliminate taxes on your Social Security benefit. Peg?
Yeah, the other confusing part is, you know, there's a phase out. So you $75,000 for single and $150,000 for joint. But above those levels, there's a phase out. So a single person all the way up to $175,000 and couples as $250,000. So there's a formula there that a lot of you may get a percentage of that. And that'll come out during when you do your taxes. But it's not just $75,000 for a single and $150,000 for joint. And one of the things that with the Social Security, too, there was kind of a complaint because if indeed they paid no tax on Social Security, really the only ones benefiting here are people 65 plus. So there's a lot of people that are on Social Security already and they're younger than 65. So, but we can't tie those two together. They just completely made this temporary, right, 25 to 28, federal deduction per person. Bruce?
Yeah, and maybe I'm a little premature here, Peg, but because maybe this applies to some of the other things of the five that we're going to get to, but it just struck me that these laws really come in. We talk a lot on this show about retirement income planning, and not to toot our own horn, but at Wealth Enhancement, we pride ourselves at helping our clients with retirement income planning. Make sure you spend the smartest money first. And part of the way you do that is you have options of where your income can come from. You know, when you're working, your paycheck is your paycheck. But when you're retired, what makes up your paycheck can be a lot of different things. And we want clients to have a lot of different options. So where these laws come into play again is there's planning opportunities to how we can maximize efficiency and minimize taxes when we draw that paycheck when people are retired. And again, that might come up in some of the other things we talk about, but it just hit my brain right now. Peg?
The other one that isn't talked about so much is there's a new charity deduction. It starts in 2026 where you know, in order to receive a deduction for amounts that are contributed to a charitable organization, you need to itemize your deductions. Now, before I go forward, so many of our clients do what's called a QCD, qualified charitable deduction. And if you're 70 and a half and you want to give money out of your IRA and you have to take a required minimum distribution, well, no, 70 and a half, you don't have to take the required anymore. It's 73. But anyway, people over 70 and a half, you can take your deduction, just take money out of your IRA and not pay tax on that. That's not what they're talking about here, because you can actually do this too. The charitable deduction 2026 is on the front page of your return. And so what that means is you actually can take $1,000 for single filers or $2,000 for joint filers, not subject to any income level. So you could have a high income and you still get to put this charity, but here's the clincher. It has to be cash. So do you remember, Bruce, in the COVID years, they did this $300 for single and $600 for couple off the tax return? Many of you will be familiar with that. That's what they're doing here. This is just a new one, $2,000 for couples and $1,000 for single. So that's something new that hasn't been talked about, Bruce.
Yeah, that's a great point. So again, if you joined us late, Peg and I today are talking about the top, what we identify as the top five things that people should know about the One Big Beautiful Bill. The first one we talked about, no surprise tax hikes, tax rates in 2026 are staying the same that they've been the last decade. The second one, we talked about the temporary targeted deduction for people 65 and older. Based on your income, you get a deduction. Peg, what else?
Well, here's a big one, right? It is the qualified tips deduction. And it's up to $25,000 deduction for tips. And there's something for overtime as well. But the no tips, no tax on tips, doesn't actually mean it eliminates tax on tips. Income from tips is still subject to what's called payroll tax. It's adjusted gross income and also could be subject to your state income tax where you live. But it is a deduction under this newly created, it's called Section 224, but it's up to $25,000 for qualified tips income from 2025 to 2028 to qualify. For the no tax tip, you must have a couple things. A taxpayer must work in an occupation that traditionally and customarily receives tips prior to 2025. They just don't want all these newly created occupations that people are trying to claim here. And then secondly, the tips must be voluntary and not mandated as part of your service. So they're trying to give the finer definition. The last thing on that is the deduction is phased out $150,000 for a single person or $300,000 for joint filers. And so a little bit more there, but that was a big to do during this process is to get that to pass, Bruce.
Yeah. And again, there's been a lot of misinformation about that. Peg, I think you did a great job of giving it clarity. Peg, the other one the thing to get to that I'm getting a lot of questions on is this expanded SALT deduction.
Oh, yes, yes. And this is a big deal because the state and local taxes, and people who itemize, it increased from $10,000 to $40,000 in 2025. And also it'll increase a little bit of 1% annually through 2025, through 2029. And then it'll revert back to this $10,000. But what's happening here is, let's say it's a Minnesota resident or places that are high tax states like New York, New Jersey, Minnesota, California, they'll be able to deduct more on their income tax. And that's a big deal. They want to be able to allow people who have to pay a lot of tax to be able to deduct those things. The other thing that they didn't change, which I thought was kind of great, is that your medical and your dental, if you itemize, now remember 70% of you don't, but if you itemize, you know, it's hard to get a medical deduction on your itemization sheet. So they kept that as exceeding 7.5% of your AGI. A lot of people were hoping that that was going to change, Bruce.
So again, the SALT is just an acronym for state and local taxes. And earlier in the show, Peg, when you talked about 70% of people just take the standard deduction. They're not itemizing anymore because their itemized deductions don't equal the standard deduction. And you said that might change for some people. This is what you were thinking of, right?
It is. And then I didn't mention either, there's kind of bogeys, if you will. There's phase outs, 500,000 joint and 250 single. So it's not for everybody out there. They do have a cap on income.
Peg, we've got less than 2 minutes before we need to take a break. What else do you want to talk about in terms of key things to know about the big, beautiful bill before we take a break?
Well, the one that wasn't on our outline, which I think is huge, is that estate tax redemption. If you die, how much do you get to keep before the government wants a percentage? So that ended up being $15 million per person. So now a couple, you can die with $30 million and not have to share with the IRS. And that was a big to-do too, right? With our financial planning team, we were working with the high net worth people to figure out if that was going to go very, very low, revert back to maybe like $7 million a piece. They ended up doing $15 million per person, Bruce.
Anything else before we take a break that you want to make sure you get in the first segment?
Well, super quick, this might, some people might care about this, but you get a $10,000 deduction for interest on auto loans if they're made in the U.S., like they're assembled in the U.S. And this is a big deal for some people, but the deduction applies only to interest on new loans taken after December 31st, 2024. But they're saying that if you have an existing loan and you refinance in 2025, so there might be some things that you could do to qualify. The rule doesn't restrict the number of loans eligible for this deduction, but it does cap $10,000 per year, Bruce.
Susie, when we come back, we'll summarize kind of everything we just said, and maybe if we have one or two more things to add, we'll do that. But I suspect there'll be a lot of interest in this topic, so calls, texts, live people at the fair, if they have questions on this or any financial topic, we'll get as many questions in the second segment as we can.
I'm thinking about getting a new car, actually, in 2026, now that you guys said that.
Good.
All right, let's remind people, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, 651-461-9226. You can also come up here at the fair. Bruce and Peg, we have folks in the audience here, so that's another way to get your questions asked. And welcome back. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Elmer, the founder of the Wealth Enhancement Group, and a financial advisor. Also on our news line, Senior Vice President Peg Webb, also a financial advisor. And we're talking about the details of President Trump's big, beautiful bill and how they pertain to you and your investments. And we've invited your calls and your texts at 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Bruce and Peg, welcome back. And just know, we have an audience member out here at the fair with a question for you. So if you want to kind of tie it up and take questions, we can do that as well.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners, for staying with us. If you joined us late, and yeah, we'll get the questions as quickly as we can, Peg. But we're talking about the one big, beautiful bill, key things that you should know about it, key things that are going to be impactful to most of you. In the first half of the show, we talked about the fact that tax rates are staying right where they are. There's not going to be a 2026 tax hike. We talked about expansion of the state and local tax deduction, big expansion. That's going to be impactful for some people that maybe have been taking a standard deduction. They might itemize. We talked about some temporary targeted deductions for seniors particularly. We talked about several, but the big one being that if you're a married couple filing jointly and your income is $150,000 or lower, you might qualify for a $6,000 deduction. Peg, there was a couple more things I know that you wanted to get to, and then we'll get to as many questions as we can. Peg?
Yeah, super fast. I wanted to bring up these Trump accounts that they're talking about. And what it is it's actually just kind of a pilot program it's a new law that institutes a pilot program in which parents can elect to have $1,000 credit paid by the U.S. government if you have an eligible child that's defined as a U.S. citizen 2025, 2026, and 2027. What's kind of interesting here is there isn't a lot of clarity, so no contribution could be made to these until July 4th of 2026, even if your child's born in 2025. The Treasury Department kind of put up their hands and just said, we need a little time to issue the rules of how the parents can elect contributions and how they can do their matching. So I just wanted to mention that. And then I don't want to not talk about the business owners out there. The pass-through business owners are getting somewhat of a boost. There's a 20% qualified business income deduction that was actually made permanent. So that was already in the law, but they're making it permanent with an enhanced structure for an additional $400. So we are just suggesting, our planning team is giving Bruce and I and all of our advisors tips as to, you know, well, what do you do with these business people? Well, you might want to reevaluate the entity the way you have it set up, whether it's an S corp or a corporation or something like that. So that's a heads up. And then lastly, Bruce, is, you know, it was kind of a controversy, if you will, is all of these things that we talked about, is that going to increase the federal deficit? And that's something that we're keen about. A lot of you are worried about, you know, how much debt there is out there. And so that's why you and I, Bruce, probably said taxes probably are more likely to go up in the future. You know, there's some risk that the Treasury is borrowing maybe too much money and the yields are getting higher. Inflation is somewhat of a problem. And how the stock market might look at that in a way of volatility and maybe less confidence. So we still have all of those things. So same old, gonna rant, but stay diversified, be flexible. Hopefully you're working with somebody if you don't have the confidence, like a financial advisor. A lot of these things are tax related. We help our clients with taxes, but a lot of people, you know, hire a CPA or a tax preparer. I think this year you really do need help because there's going to be some ripple effects that happen that maybe you don't see on your tax return. And so you may even want to do like a tax estimate before 2025 year end. Just a thought, Bruce.
Peg, that's a great sum up and a great close. Susie, let's go to the listeners and get as many questions as we can.
All right, 651-461-9226. That is the number to call or text if you have a question for Bruce or Peg. A very interesting topic. A lot of people have questions, including John. John is here at the Minnesota State Fair at the balcony ledge, and he asked me the question, and I had no idea what he was talking about. So that's why he's going to ask you guys. So John grew up in Minnesota, you guys, and now lives in California and is back for the great Minnesota get-together. John, what's your question for Bruce and Peg?
Is there a way to deduct the interest on a yeah, Schwab calls it a PAL loan, pledged asset line, if you take out that, you know, you can't, you know, is there a way to deduct the interest on that?
Peg, Bruce?
Hey, John. Welcome back to Minnesota. And John probably knows he lives in California now. Minnesotans are rightfully proud of their state fair. I think it's one of the biggest per capita state fairs in the country. And John even came back from California. Peg, the deductibility of the interest on a leveraged or margin loan, my first thought is that that's not deductible, but you probably are more well-versed on the tax considerations on this than I am. Peg?
You know, what's interesting is I actually have a PAL loan with Schwab, but I've never used it. It's kind of interesting because I set it up years ago thinking, I might want to leverage, you know, some of the things that I have at Schwab. But when you think about a deductibility, I know that there's a lot of, if you use the PAL, in the deduction is limited to your, I'm looking it up now, you're limited to your net interest income for the year, but you can carry over any unused deduction in future years. So I would talk to your CPA about that. I don't have a lot of clients that use that feature. Do you, Bruce?
No, I can probably count on one hand the number of times the years that I've had somebody use that.
Bruce,
yeah, so I'm thinking that you can't, or even if it would be minimal.
Okay. John, did that satisfy you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Very good. 651-461-9226. If you are listening and you've been sticking with us for the whole hour, we've been talking about the big, beautiful bill that passed, and we're wondering if you have questions for Bruce or for Peg at 651-461-9226. What would you use that loan for? Could that just be for buying a house or a car? Back to the PAL loan, Peg.
Well, so what Schwab does and all these other companies do is you have assets, right? You might have bonds, stocks, mutual funds, ETFs in the account, and you don't want to go get a loan from a bank, if you will, or Schwab has banking too, but you would be able to use your collateral of your assets to get a better rate of interest. And so I have had clients use it. Let's say if you want to go buy a home and you haven't even sold your original home, a lot of clients don't want to be trying to time that perfectly. And that's where we've utilized it the most, is where you take this kind of short-term loan, and then you are able to pay for your new house, but yet you give yourself some time to get out of your other house before it's sold. And now then you have to pay an interest rate for the privilege of being able to do that.
I understand. 651-461-9226. That's a line you can call or text, or you can come up here at the fair and ask the question like John did. The texter writes, what if you are over 65 and not receiving Social Security? Do you still get the new 65-plus deduction? I'm 69 and not taking Social Security until I'm 70.
Hey, yeah, Susie. So, Peg, this again, there's been confusion, and I think, you know, whether it was just misinformation, I don't know who put it out there, but this idea that you are going to avoid taxes on Social Security, the two kind of don't have anything to do with each other, right? Because you do not have to be drawing your Social Security benefit to still qualify for this deduction. It's based on your age and your income, right, Peg?
Yes, that is true, Bruce. And I think there's more clarity than as if they tried to offset taxation on Social Security, right? The theme was, how do we help people pay, you know, for this tax on Social Security? And the government selected, although temporary, seniors 65 plus can claim this extra $6,000 federal deduction. Nothing to do with Social Security. It's just whether you are taking it or you're delaying it, both people who either itemize or non-itemize, you know, you do the standard, get to claim this deduction. But it is subject to your income. So $75,000 if you're single, $150,000 if you're joint. There's some above the levels higher than that on a phase out. So you may be able to take a percentage of that $6,000 per person by the calculated math that the IRS is going to make us do, and then you're capped out, per se, for a couple at $250,000 versus the $150,000. Bruce?
Hey, Peg, I also wanted to go back to Susie and John's question on the PAL loan, and you gave a great example, but isn't part of the motivation also, if you're bullish about the investment that you're in, and or you don't want to recognize any taxes, rather than sell shares of the investment, you're going to borrow against that equity. And even though you're paying some interest costs, you're not paying taxes because you sold something, and you're still in the position if you think it's going to continue to grow. Isn't that also part of the motivation why people would use these?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, Bruce. I've actually never, and maybe it's my conservative nature, because it would be just like if you have money in the bank, are you willing to risk it? You know, now you're taking a loan and you have a cost for that loan. So even if your investment does well, you first have to make up that cost of that loan. So
the other thing I wanted to mention really quickly, and we probably don't do this often enough, Peg, is oftentimes our topic on this show coincides with our biweekly articles that we put out. And they're in several papers. Probably the biggest, best known is the St. Paul Pioneer Press. But the article is called Five Ways the New Tax Bill Could Impact Your Wallet. And we wrote about a lot of the same things that we're talking about today, if people want to search out and find that article. And then in terms of questions, I've kind of stockpiled a couple, Susie and Peg. When I get questions more than once, I make notes if I'm getting, you know, multiple people asking me the same question or variations of the same question. Peg, one that I've gotten a lot recently, and I'm not exactly sure what inspired it, But people have asked me variations of the question, is wealth enhancement a one-stop shop? Can I do everything financial at wealth enhancement? How would you reply to that?
Well, I'm very proud of the fact that, late 1990s, we decided that a team effort would be better than an individual effort, meaning more heads, putting their heads together, reviewing case studies about people, because not one of us could possibly know it all, right? So when you talk about one-stop shop, the idea is that if you have this team, there's all different facets of what you need to do if you're a comprehensive planner. And comprehensive planning is not just about investments. You know, should I buy this stock? Should I buy this bond? It's more so and more encompassing, which means, oh, does that actually fit my family? Does that fit what I want to do from a tax standpoint, from a legal standpoint, from a guided investment standpoint? Is it diversified enough? So this big team approach allows the financial advisors under Wealth Enhancement Group to not only have a lot of history and knowledge themselves, but yet you could stump any one of us at any moment because there's so much to know. And so this roundtable that we built, 20 plus years ago, they are there, very qualified people that you and I and all the advisors at Wealth Enhancement Group can reach out and get some clarity if we need so from the roundtable. So I would say, Bruce, is absolutely yes, we're a one-stop shop. And I just encourage people, if they want to know more about our story and how we started, that they just come and visit us for a no-obligation review.
Yeah, and Peg, what I tell people is, I see a lot of commercials for, other firms in our space, our competition. And by the nature of the commercial, I can tell they don't do a lot of the things that we do as standard operating procedure, and I'm proud of that. But we outsource some things, right? So in terms of, I'll give you an example. We have attorneys on our staff so that we can analyze legal documents and advise, but we can't actually draft your legal document. The regulatory bodies in our industry would see that as a conflict of interest. So you have to go find an independent attorney to draft your legal documents, but we advise on them. So there's some things we can't do, and those things we outsource, but we come as close to a one-stop shop, I think, as anyone within the industry. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter says, I love your show. I'm 71 and my wife is 65. We are planning to do a Roth conversion for some of our traditional funds for 2025. Would it be better for me to convert some of my funds or for my wife to convert some of her funds? Thank you.
Oh, that is such a good question. And Peg, I'm probably going to learn from you on this. Again, I just had this happen during the week. We're looking at a married couple. We kind of determined that Roth conversion makes some sense this year, but they both have IRAs. How do you make the determination which one of the two you convert, or is it a combination of both, or what goes into your thought process when you make that recommendation?
Well, I've always felt that the older one would do the conversion, because if you're 71, you will be at 73 years old soon, and there's this required minimum distribution at 73 that you have to take money out and it'll be taxable. So if you could do the Roth conversion, then you would delay, having to pay tax on that money when you're 73. So if you did it now and it made sense, and I talked about all these extras, with 65 plus, it may be a year that it would be a good idea to do a Roth conversion, especially this year. And so I normally, Bruce, would take the older of the two.
I agree with that. I think age is probably the biggest consideration. Peg, I also think the size of the IRAs can make a difference. If one partner has a really large IRA and the other one has a small one, we might go take it out of the bigger account that's going to be subjected to a bigger number when they get to RMD. Am I misguided on that, or would you agree with that?
No, I agree with that. I think we take everything into consideration, but at the end of the day, it tends to end up with the one that's older.
All right. 651-461-9226 if you have a question for Bruce and Peg, or you can come out here at the fair and come up to the booth and ask us the question this way as well. This texter writes, does the $1,200 additional deduction for over 65 couples apply to Minnesota tax returns as well as the feds?
So, Peg, I'm not sure what the reference to the $1,200 is. I don't know if they're referencing the what we talked about earlier about the temporary targeted deduction. Or do you know what they mean by the $1,200, Peg?
Yeah. So each person, let's say if you're a married couple, you each get $6,000 if you're 65 plus. So what they're probably asking is if you're 65 plus and you have this $1,200 deduction, does that ripple over to the state, Minnesota state return? I have no idea at this point how that would carry over. I mean, it's going to be a credit on your federal return, but I haven't done any research as to how it's going to flow. We work with everybody in, 50-some states, so
yeah.
I haven't been familiar with how that's going to ripple over.
No one asked this question today, but Peg, one of the questions I still get a lot that I just thought of now as we're talking about this is taxes on Social Security. Again, we'd still pay taxes on our Social Security benefit at the federal level, but only 12 states tax that money at the state level. We work with people all over the country, but this show originates, and I live in the state of Minnesota, and a lot of my Minnesota clients are very frustrated because we've been hearing for years that the state of Minnesota is going to do away with taxes on Social Security, but it still hasn't happened, Peg.
Well, right. Well, I just agree with you, that Minnesota is one of the very few. I think there's only 7 or 8 states or something that are still taxing on it. So
I thought it was 12, but maybe it's less now. But I don't. Last time I looked, it was 12. Susie, okay. I didn't mean to overrun on that answer, but that comes up so often, I wanted to just mention it.
Well, we have about 30 seconds left. Can you maybe quickly tell us through a texter more about the senior deduction phase out, or do you want to save that for next week?
Peg, can you do it quick?
Well, everybody gets it, right? Unless you have over $250,000 as a couple, you'll get a percentage. If you're under 150 joint, you're going to get 100% of the $12,000 off your taxes.
All right. With that, thank you for listening today. The number to call, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Have a great week, Bruce and Peg. If you did not get your question answered, you can email it to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com.